Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, a candid conversation as we learn about types of dementias, such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, frontal temporal, and Lewy body, and the effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, overcome obstacles, and find positive outcomes. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Well, hey, everybody in Caregiver and Care Partner Nation. I just coined that phrase. I've talked a lot of times about frontal temporal degeneration. It's a difficult disease that is not as well known as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, Huntington's disease, vascular dementia. You know, it's kind of one of those that in the last probably 20, 25 years, we've learned more about this disease than we ever thought we'd need to know. But it is a difficult disease, and it comes in a couple of different forms, okay? So frontotemporal dementia is named because it primarily affects the frontal lobe, the front of your brain where your forehead is, and the temporal lobes. And it's the most common dementia between the ages of 40 and 60 years old. Sometimes it's referred to as frontal temporal lobar degeneration, and the term FTLD is actually used name about 20, 25 years ago, but now we just have shortened it to frontotemporal dementia. So I had a show a couple of weeks ago where I talked about the stages of Alzheimer's. I don't know that anybody has ever really talked about what stages exist when you're dealing with FTD. And it's difficult. So I'm going to start by talking about what are the three types. What is it? What is this disease? And the first one is called BV, behavioral variant, frontotemporal dementia. Okay? It used to be known as Pick's disease. But they don't call it that anymore because, honestly, it's such a ravaging, horrible disease that the family behind the doctor who discovered it don't want his name on it. I kind of feel sorry for them. I wonder what the Alzheimer's family thinks, if they would like to have their name removed. I might want to if I were them. Anyway, the behavioral variant, it has some really strange characteristics, starting with the person doesn't have any short-term memory loss. They seem like they're perfectly normal. They look like your average productive person in society. And then somewhere around the age 40, they start behaving erratically. They do things they never would have done. Telling someone that they look fat, saying derogatory names to people, calling people, you know, mean names or acting racist and things like that, things that maybe they never did before. Generally, they're getting on the internet and looking at pornography, and their family members start saying, you know, their wife or husband might start saying they're demanding way too much sex, you know, 12 times a night kind of thing. It's hard. It's a difficult disease. And these are people that never even had so much as a traffic ticket, suddenly breaking the law, stealing, spending money that is not theirs, just all kinds of symptoms that arise through this behavioral variant. The second one is primary progressive aphasia, and it's also called semantic dementia. So primary progressive aphasia, what that means is aphasia is a loss of word. So they lose their words or they start speaking just in familiar phrases over and over and over again, saying the same things that they've always said. Like I had a lady who was 51, her name was Gail, and she would say, God bless you, I love you, God bless you, I love you. Or they repeat what you say, which we call echophasia. It's got, you know, some different characteristics, and it can be mistaken for Alzheimer's because they can't find the word when they're talking. They will miss parts of a sentence. They won't complete a sentence. They leave words out. They have trouble naming objects and things like that. And so that whole variation of the disease is really about language skills almost completely. Typically, they still look normal. They can walk and talk and drive a car and everything like that. So we don't generally recognize that. Then there's another one that is under motor and movement disorder. And so it kind of looks a little bit like Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS. And so it's got some kind of funny names that go under it. One of them is supranuclear palsy, prosupranuclear palsy. So PSNP or PSP, some docs just shorten it. Then they have cordobasal ganglionic degeneration, meaning it looks a lot like Parkinson's disease. It's the same area of the brain that causes Parkinson's. So they lose their ability and their fluidity of movement. And it's really a difficult one. Within about 3 to 5 years, they're in a wheelchair. They cannot walk very well. They can't feed themselves. Their throat and their lungs and their muscles and everything shut down so they can't swallow. It's just a super difficult disease. And then also under that motor and movement is FTD with motor neuron disease and also ALS with dementia. So they're very closely related. And why? Why are they closely related? So the cause generally is a genetic gene mutation, and it's caused from chromosome 9 malfunctioning, and when it doubles or triples, it will become one of these diseases. So my mom actually had the gene mutation in the C9, but she actually had the ORF72. So in her case, when she passed it down to my brother and my sister, it tripled. So that chromosome starts off as two, one from your mom and one from your dad. It creates your DNA. And then all of a sudden it started tripling. Then there was five, and then there was eight. And so it's adding three every time. Okay? And so when that number gets over 60, when it has doubled or tripled over the number of 60, you're going to have one of these diseases. So they're really, really tough. They're really tough. Oftentimes these folks will curse at their family members. They're not paying bills, so they get you in financial trouble. They have no filter on their mouth. They'll say whatever they're thinking. They have extreme apathy, not caring how you feel about anything. If they hurt your feelings, so what? Get over it. They're moving on. You should too, which it really doesn't work that way in relationships. So I thought because I went through all the Alzheimer's stages, it would be really great to go through the stages of FTD because honestly, I don't think a lot of people have seen this. So in the first stage, it's just kind of normal aging. But when it gets to the second stage, the typical first signs and early depression symptoms, then you're going to see alterations in their alertness. Sometimes they're paying attention to you. Sometimes they're not. They're going from this to that to this to that. They're moving around. They've got a very low attention span. They also have apathy, as I was telling you, not caring what you think. Their emotional connection is disconnected, essentially. Okay. Slow withdrawal of emotional responses. So you might say, I cut myself and I'm bleeding, and it takes them 2 or 3 minutes to say, what'd you say? Are you hurt? So they act like it seems like they don't care. And it's really just their brain malfunctioning. They also have agitation, bursts of anger that come out of nowhere, multiple signs of disinterest that I just kind of explained to you. The apathy that we talked about is not related to being sad. It's just they don't care what you're talking about. They're not interested. Very little insight to whether or not they're sad or not. No self-awareness of changes in their mood. You see all these changes. They're on a roller coaster of emotion, and they don't see any of it. They're just plugging along as far as they're concerned. Okay? Increased irritability. I had a lady call me about 2 weeks ago that told me that her husband every night around 7 o'clock goes into the bathroom and beats on the counter and on the door, and he just screams. And she didn't know what to do. And I said, I'll tell you what I'd do. Get up and go out of the house and go to a place where you can't hear him. He might be just frustrated with his disease, or it is something in his brain that's making him do that, and it's like on a time clock. So if she knows that's going to happen, just go to a place where she can't hear him. That's easier. Again, I'm going to talk about medications in an upcoming show, and I want to make sure you know you can't throw any medications at this disease. It just won't work. All right, what are some other things that you see in the first typical signs of all three different types? You will see poor concentration, lack of attention during any interaction. You can be sitting there at dinner trying to have a conversation, and they don't seem like they're interacting with you. A sadness or a negative mood, kind of walking around like they're just a sad sack and they don't want to talk to anybody or deal with anybody. People, you don't know what a gift that is. There are people that literally live with someone with FTD that's throwing objects, that's hitting people, that is screaming, like the lady who said her husband goes in and pounds on the walls and screams. If they are sad or negative and they're just, being by themselves, take it as a gift. Poor appetite or increased overeating. I have never actually seen the poor appetite. I guess it could exist. But the overeating is a big issue. It seems like they will eat anything that is not nailed down. I mean, literally, they are eating everything. If you have a cabinet that has snacks in it, by the time you get home from work, they'll all be gone. They'll eat the things in the refrigerator that are expired and don't care. I mean, they'll just literally eat anything they can get their hands on. Insomnia or hypersomnia. So if they're sleeping more than 14 hours a day, increased risk for infections and atrophied muscles, meaning their muscles are going to seize up. So it's not a good idea, even if it thinks, as a care partner, you think it's a good idea when they're sleeping. If they're sleeping more than 14 hours a day, that's not good. Okay? So anyway, those are the things that happen for all of them pretty much in the first and second stage. Basically the second stage. Now the third stage. This only applies to the behavioral people, the BV people. They have a sudden interest in drinking. I had somebody that was on my FTD support group last week who said her husband was an alcoholic, but he hadn't drank anything in 30 years, and suddenly he is obsessed with going to the liquor store. So it isn't just drinking alcohol, but they drink, and they'll use a different glass every time they get a glass of water or something like that. It's just really, really excessive drinking. Gradual loss of empathetic response. Again, not feeling sad when you're sad, not commiserating with you if something has gone wrong in your day. You're not going to get any interaction there at all, and that is difficult for husbands and wives. I think that's one of the hardest things is that all of a sudden they won't hug you, they won't kiss you, they're not emotionally engaged. They have a decreased insight into their own behavior. They can have increased issues of shoplifting because they don't realize what they're doing. Here's a weird caveat to that. When I talk to people that actually have FTD in the behavioral variant, they say they know they're doing something wrong, but they can't stop themselves from doing it. It's like a runaway train. And so that's part of the disease, is that they know they're doing something they shouldn't be doing, but they just can't stop the impulse. The impulse control is just lost. The needing to do this thing is overwhelming to the point that they just have to do it. It's amazing. Increase in weight. I just talked about that. They eat everything that's not nailed down. Very self-centered sort of narcissistic behavior. You can't drive. Don't tell me I can't drive. You can't drive better than me. I am the king of this house. I do all the cooking around here. Don't tell me I can't do this anymore. You know, things like that. Very self-centered. Uncaring behavior. I just talked about that. And withdrawal from people and activities. So they don't want to be around people anymore. They don't want to have anybody sort of see what's going on with their disease. It's really tough. And they kind of isolate themselves to a huge degree. So now this is going to be moving into our friends with primary progressive aphasia, the word problem as well. So they have an increase in spontaneous behavior such as inappropriate friendliness, speaking too candidly with no filter, like I was telling you, revealing personal information to strangers, becoming angry during routine tasks at a job or at home, and may appear restless or irritable. So in this particular case, they might walk up to you and say, "Hi, I'm a firefighter." And you're like, "Yeah, well, congratulations. Good for you." But they'll do things like that. They'll walk up to people or maybe comment on the size of their personal apparatus. Things that would shock somebody. Saying if they thought somebody was fat or ugly or stupid, it just comes right out of their mouth. This is when this is an issue. And if somebody tries to coach them or redirect them in a work situation where it's having to do with your colleagues, then they get super angry and just don't want any part of that and get very irritable. And this is generally where we can see a diagnosis, because something has changed in that person to a point where now a family member is saying, maybe we need to check this out. Maybe we need to see what's happening. Okay? So also for the behavioral, the primary progressive and semantic folks, unusual eating habits such as food fixation, eating too much of a specific food, chips, something like that, great craving for sweets, sucking and chewing on objects like pens, combs, spoons. They always have something in their mouth and they're sort of messing with it almost like it's a straw and they're trying to drink from it. And then they just shovel food in. They just shovel it in like they haven't eaten in a year. They've been on the show alone or something and they're finally seeing food for the first time in a long time and just shoving it in their mouth. So this will happen in those two of the three variants. Another one. Let's see. I've got two more in that category. They ignore social etiquette and boundaries such as getting too close when speaking to other people. Tendency to hug, touch, or talk in an inappropriate or intimate way. And that's new for this person. So in this particular case, about 6 months ago, I was asked to speak at the Kiwanis Club because one of their members in Lakewood was doing exactly the things I just read. The person was standing too close to his friends and colleagues. He would just walk up and hug somebody and kind of grab their ass or something, you know, talking right in their ear, touching them in inappropriate places, touching a woman's breast that he should not have done that with, that was just a friend in the Kiwanis group. And they liked this person, but they wanted to know what was going on. So they had me come and speak on this subject, and this was one of the biggest topics that we had to approach. And it's really difficult. So this, the way that you can diagnose this in your own family, you might say, gosh, this sounds really like somebody I love. If it's different than what they used to do, if this is a new behavior for them, they used to always behave themselves and never say inappropriate things and would just shake a hand with somebody but maybe preferred to stay away from them or something like that, stay away from people. And now all of a sudden they're hugging and touching everybody, and when they do that, they touch them in inappropriate places. They say inappropriate things like, you're really sexy, or I'd like to make love to you, or something like that. And they never would have done that before. This is where you would recognize this disease, okay? All right. So poor judgment applies to all of that, right? But that definitely applies in the area of the behavioral variant, the PICS, as we know it, the primary progressive aphasia, and the semantic behavior. Now, moving to the next one, loss of facial empathy, kind of a masked face, like they're lost in thought, but their face hardens and they're just staring and it seems weird. That happens to the behavioral folks, and it also happens in the motor and movements disorder. It doesn't really happen to the people that are having the language skills. It's not an issue for them, okay? Decreased interest in their spouse, their children, their family, friends, things like that. That applies all across the board to all three types. It's painful for families because this person is young. They're between the ages generally of 40 to 60 when they are diagnosed, and all of a sudden they don't seem to be interested in their kids' schoolwork. They're not interested in their wife needing or husband needing a hug, that intimacy. All that is just gone. And that applies all the way across the board in this second variant, stage three of this disease. I didn't mean to mess that up for you folks. I hope it didn't confuse you. All right. So very mild short-term memory loss could apply, this is the first time I've ever heard this, could apply across any of these, the behavioral, the PPA, or the motor and movement disorder. So, interesting. I did not know that. I thought it was more of a attention span issue. Personal hygiene issues applies across the board to everybody. They're not putting on deodorant when it's going to be a 91 degree day, like it is here in Denver, and they start smelling like they need a shower. Their math skills kind of go away, okay? They used to have good math skills, but it's just kind of lost now. They can't balance the checkbook. They can't keep receipts. They're not paying attention to what something costs, and they may spend way too much money. They might lose their visual ability. They're not being able to see as well as they used to. Now, for our friends with ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, that's different. They can see just fine. They're the only ones that don't have trouble in this area. Mild word-finding difficulty. That is a big deal to our people with the primary progressive aphasia, the language and semantic skills, the semantic dementias. That is where they're starting to really lose their language and their words, okay? They're the only ones that have that issue. apathetic appearance in their whole body. That really only applies, again, which is surprising to me, just the way that they look, the way that they're dressing, making sure that they're groomed correctly and all that kind of stuff. That only applies to the primary progressive aphasia and semantic folks, the language people. I think that's really surprising. But having said that, I think the people that are the behavioral folks, they get so sexually driven that it does matter to them how they look. They want to make sure they've got cologne on or whatever, that their hair is combed and their teeth is brushed and all that kind of stuff. Okay? So, yeah, finding that kind of interesting. Difficulty moving whole or body parts in stage three, that really only applies to the motor folks. They start losing their balance. They're losing their muscle mass. They start losing the ability to walk and talk and speak and all kinds of issues for them. And typically, they end up in a wheelchair pretty quickly. So this is stage three, so it's not really shocking that they're having these issues at this point. Okay, so struggle to form words. Again, we're going to find that only with our primary progressive aphasia people. Trembling limbs, only applying to the supranuclear folks in the movement and disorder. Even the people with ALS haven't experienced that yet. Those folks, the primary supranuclear palsy, they are going to have trembling limbs, kind of like Parkinsonian shakes, balance problems, tipsy walking gait, meaning they're walking, they're losing their balance from side to side, and they will have what we call doll eyes, an inability to coordinate the eye movements and aim the eyes up and down quickly. So they just stare straight ahead. And then one more of those is stiff muscles in motion just when they're sitting still. Our movements disorders people are dealing with that. We're going to take a short break and we will come back and we will go through the rest of stage three and then stage four and five so you understand this disease a little better. We'll be right back.
Living and working with Alzheimer's and other dementias can often be challenging. Summit Resilience Training provides education utilizing non-medical approaches for those who work with our friends affected by dementia. Believing families still need one-on-one assistance, we provide classes which help them understand the diseases affecting their loved ones, offering strategies and techniques for success with activities of daily living and working with confusing behaviors. We offer in-home assessments to clarify symptoms of dementia diseases and help families work together to find moments of joy while living with memory loss and impairment. Education programs instilling person-centered care philosophies are offered for professional caregivers working in communities and homes, which can be customized for their staff. Training is also available for first responders, such as law enforcement, fire, and EMT personnel. We are passionate that people with dementias, such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and others, are approached with compassion and understanding, and those who work with them have all the tools they need for success. Call us at Summit Resilience Training, 303-420-6988, to schedule a class or in-home assessment. Visit our website at summitresiliencetraining.com for more information.
Welcome back to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Okay, today I'm going through frontotemporal dementia and the stages. That's a mouthful, isn't it? And the stages that are involved and the presentation of symptoms when you have the behavioral variant, which is personality. It's a change in that person's whole demeanor. They look normal, they act normal, but they're acting strange, and everything seems to be askew. That's our BV folks, behavioral and personality. Then we've got the communication and language people that have primary progressive aphasia, meaning they can't find the word. They have semantic dementia, and they just are not able to put thought together and have symmetry to their words, their phrases, their thoughts, okay? And then last but not least, we have the motor and movement disorder. group, which includes the I have to say this right, pro-supranuclear palsy. I never heard the pro before, so I don't want to say it. We call that PCP. And then we have the cortical basal ganglionic degeneration. Again, that's more in the area of people that have Parkinson's disease. The basal ganglia is what creates the dopamine, which makes our movements fluid, essentially, so that we can walk and talk and dance and swing our arms and walk with a fluid gait. Gait being G-A-I-T, meaning the way you walk, your stride. Okay? And it also includes FTD with motor neuron disease and Lou Gehrig's disease, we call ALS. All right. So getting back to where we were, our friends with the motor and movement disorder group, they also are clumsy with one side of the body. So they might have an arm hanging. They might walk with their left foot or right foot kind of flopping. It really disrupts their walking system, their gait. So that's a big deal for our motor friends. Okay. Now, for a little bit here, I'm only going to be talking about our motor and movements disorder for the rest of the stage three. So in stage three for these guys, again, ALS, the supranuclear palsy, all that. All right, movement and motor disorder. They have stiffness in one arm, followed by stiffness in one leg. They call that paratonia. Interesting, never heard that before. They have alien hand movements, meaning the hand pushes away other objects or pushes the other hand. So they're doing strange things. They might push away a glass on a table or push their own hand away or push your hand away. They're just in sort of a pushing forward moving motion that seems erratic. Doesn't seem to make any sense. The motor and movements disorders people also have a magnetic hand, meaning it seems to be drawn to the other hand or other people's hand. So they might go and just grab your hand. They might want to clasp their own hands. They might move back and forth between the two, trying to grab your hand and grab their own hand. And it just seems odd, okay? They have muscle twitches or flutters, and they call that fasciculations. So it's not really tremors. It's more of a jumping. It's almost like a restless nerve issue it's kind of similar to Tourette's, where you can see a person sort of have that jerking movement. People with the motor and movement disorder will do the same thing. Sometimes they will pound on something. I've seen that often. They get muscle jerks and muscle cramps. And because of that, and the fact that they end up in a wheelchair pretty quickly, they also get a loss of their muscle tone. Okay, so these are a big deal. They have increased falls, and when they fall, they get injured. Huge. They'll end up in a wheelchair. Difficulty doing skilled hand movements with one or both hands or arms. We call that apraxia. And it may result in difficulty in buttoning your shirt, turning book pages, shaving, applying makeup, eating, writing. So their hands are no longer working when they're trying to do something that requires that hand-eye-hand coordination, folding a towel, brushing your teeth, putting toothpaste on a toothbrush, and some of the things that they just told us in this book that I'm using. So they would have an extreme difficulty maybe turning a menu, you know, turning the pages on a menu. So if you see them having issues like this, you know it's getting to a pretty serious point. So now we're going to go to stage four, which we call early middle stage. And now we have jumped back to our behavioral people, our BV, behavioral and personality, and our communication and language people, our PPA and semantics. So they have issues with judgment. You're not supposed to run that red light. You're not supposed to tell somebody they're stupid. You can't spend that money when you don't have it in your bank. You can't afford that object, so don't buy it. They have issues with that. And actually, the rest of these are all going to fall under just the behavioral person. So they have trouble with rational thoughts. They think their wife or husband is having an affair. They think you're trying to take something from them. The behavioral people can just be an absolute nightmare on this area. Personality changes, severe personality changes, lack of impulse control, which I was telling you earlier, very little concern about losses. If they hurt your feelings, if they lose money, if they get a ticket because they ran a red light or something, they couldn't care less. Rapid eye movement disorder. So they have sleep disturbances. The behavioral people are generally not sleeping well. They're thrashing all night long. They're fighting with people, things like that. Trashing, kicking, punching, striking out while sleeping. All huge. And you know, it's interesting because our friends with Parkinson's have the same problem. It's really interesting. But these are just the behavioral people of FTD. So I find that absolutely fascinating. They have trouble reading and writing accurately. Now we're going to move to the people that also have PPA. So they also, they have trouble with reading and writing accurately. The people that have the loss of change in executive function, managing time, attention, switch focus, planning and problem solving and integrating past experience with present action, that's going to happen to our people that have the behavioral personality. And it's also going to happen to our motor people. That's interesting. Now, our primary progressive aphasia people, they have difficulty expressing words at this point. They have non-fluent aphasia. So their words and their phrases have turned into word salad. The things they say don't make sense any longer. They're just using the same phrasing or repeating what you say. And they'll suffer with serious incorrect grammar when they're talking to you. They just cannot seem to get a thought across or use the right words or verbiage when they're trying to put phrases together. It's just super difficult for them. For a little bit here, now we're going to quit talking about the behavioral people, and we're only going to talk about the primary progressive aphasia and the semantic folks, except for in one category where we're going to add our people with motor skill. So our PPA folks have difficulty naming objects or recognizing familiar words or faces. That is the left side of your brain, your temporal lobe, helps you to understand what an object is. I'm holding a piece of paper in my hand. I'm speaking into a microphone. I'm sitting in a chair. I'm in a studio. They couldn't name any of that. It just wouldn't make sense. And they might grab another name. A microphone might be a stool. A chair that you're sitting in might be a table. The drink I have sitting next to me might be just a cup, not necessarily what the drink is or something like that. So they really, really struggle with naming objects or recognizing familiar faces or words that they should, like on a menu, a hamburger or French fries. It might as well be written in Vietnamese. It's really difficult for the PPA people. They also have trouble performing activities of daily living. They start struggling with dressing themselves. It's strange because it's a language problem, but they seem to be the first ones that go to having problems with dressing themselves, grooming themselves, bathing themselves, and things of that nature. You would think that the motor people would, wouldn't you? But not so. All right. And they have a very slow response when they're conversing with you. They just really struggle with answering any question that you have or inserting a thought when it's necessary. Okay. Now, where we are going to include our motor people again is slow, weak, slurred, breathy, nasally speech. And they call that dysarthria. So they basically are kind of talking through their nose. They are struggling with what they're trying to say. it just sounds kind of weak when they're talking. You know, things like that. They could slur their speech. The words just don't come out really well. It's more like they're struggling to breathe. And that includes not only our primary progressive aphasia folks, but our people that have the motor problems. All right. So our PPA folks, they can speak at a normal rate, but they are difficult to understand. So they might talk just like I am talking to you right now. But if I walked in a room and I said, "Hi, I'm Jill, and I'm here to work with you today," they might say, "Hi, I'm Jill. I'm here to work with you today." So they say it sometimes at a lower rate. Sometimes they say it at the same rate. But that fluent aphasia seems to be more difficult to understand, or they mix the words up. They also, they can express their emotions better through their face than through their words. So you'll have to sort of read their expression in order to understand what's bothering them. Slow rate of speech. They can repeat short single words, just like I was telling you. They might have an outburst of laughing or crying for no apparent reason. You just don't have no idea why this is happening. And then, unfortunately, the rest here applies in stage three to the motor people, where they have absence or slowed movements. Sometimes in Alzheimer's, we call that bradykinesia. They call it akinesia with this particular disease, FTD. So what that means is that they're getting very, very slow in moving an arm or a leg. Everything's like it's in slow motion. And it actually does have bradykinesia on here, a lack of spontaneous movement, just being able to jump up and go into the other room and get something to drink or to do any exercise or anything like that. And then last but not least, shortness of breath due to weak muscles. Unfortunately, God bless them, this applies mostly to our people with ALS. They really have trouble with the complete weakness of every body part. That is such a horrible, horrible, horrible disease. All right, now we're going to get into stage five, late middle stage. So our behavioral people might have memory problems at this point. Nobody else will, just our behavioral. And they'll suffer severe cognitive deficits, meaning their thought process just isn't working well. They're not connecting the dots. They're not finishing any task from A to Z. They're struggling with just the entire synapses being connected and connecting a beginning thought to an end thought and cementing it as a late-stage memory. They have language skills that are problems later, where they're just struggling to find the word and we confuse it with the PPA people. But it just seems to happen to that group of people as well. They have visual spatial skills that are still kind of functional, meaning they have peripheral vision all the way around them. And this applies to literally everybody. Okay. Great loss of affect. Affect meaning a masked face. Again, staring in space, but having a hardened look on your face that almost looks kind of scary. It almost looks like a person when they've died. And everybody across the board has that problem. Every single one of these groups has that issue. In fact, for the next couple of things that I tell you, they're all going to have this issue. So they increase their sleep day and night. Every single one of them will sleep more. The BV people, the PPA people, the motor people, they'll all sleep more. My brother, who is in late stage in this disease, every time he sits down, he falls asleep. It's just amazing to me. Difficulty swallowing. You have to remind them all to swallow their food. And again, it's across the board with all three types. They have urinary incontinence often. meaning they need to be guided to the bathroom. They need to be cued to go to the bathroom about every 2 to 3 hours because they just won't be able to hold their urine or anything like that. Severe loss of empathy happens all the way across the board, every one of them. Difficulty adjusting mood to the situation, like knowing when to be sad or knowing when to be happy. That really happens with just your behavioral people and your motor people. Interesting. Emotional ups and downs. Same thing. They're on like a roller coaster of emotions. That typically happens with your behavioral people and your motor people. Your primary progressive folks are just moving right along. Loss of language fluidity. That is just our primary progressive aphasia folks. Okay. Now, the last part of it in this last stage, which stage 5 is kind of where we're starting to check out on these kinds of things. All these people are really, really, really struggling with, just their movements. They're more slow. They've got complete apathy. They're just not the normal people that we have known. So, mutism, losing their words altogether. Well, we know it's going to be our PPA people, right? Our language and communication folks. They will go completely silent. Decreased motor movement skills. That's completely the motor and movement group. Short-term memory loss. Again, the motor and movement disorders group. Struggles to form words, same group. Abnormal posturing, frozen movements, that's our motor and movement disorder groups. Unaware of one side of the body, same group. Reflexes are overactive, and that really is that's really tough. The only people that doesn't apply to in the motor is the ALS people. Their reflexes, their muscles just kind of die. They don't have any jumping arms or legs or anything like that. But the FTD with motor neuron folks absolutely do. All right. So in stage 6, we're getting really to the end here. And at stage 6, you might see short-term or long-term memory affected. They might stay in constant motion, walking, moving around for hours at a time. Disheveled appearance. They're not brushing their hair. They're not brushing their teeth. Their clothes look sloppy if someone's not helping them. And even if they are, they might be pulling at them or messing up their hair. You're going to start to see severe weight loss in every category. Beginning of bowel incontinence. Sometimes they can feed themselves. Sometimes they cannot. Great loss of language, mutism. Well, we know that happens to our PPA people. That happened in the last stage. They're super difficult to engage. You can't talk to them. They look like they're lost in their own world. They have a total loss of the facial affect where they just look like they're staring off into space 90% of the time, and they kind of look like they're just a stone face. Their gait is greatly affected. They've lost the ability to walk. It's not even there anymore. They could have combative or aggressive behavior. And they won't wear hearing aids, dentures, eyeglasses. That just isn't going to work. And our poor people that have the motor and movement disorder, they're unable to sit straight up. They cannot walk. They've lost their speech. They're unable to hold their head up. They may have to have like a brace or something that holds their head in their wheelchair. They're at an extreme risk for falls. They're probably not walking at all. And they're at an extreme risk for skin breakdown. If you don't roll someone over in bed or in a wheelchair with about every hour, they can have patches of their skin that seem to bleed and just break, get really, really thin. So the bottom line of all of this is that some of the frontotemporal dementias are recognized as a tauopathy disease. I've talked about that with Dr. Pressman on my show before, that it's caused by a tau protein that is messing up the C9, chromosome 9, and making it continually doubling and tripling. Tau is a protein found in the brain's cellular structure. Once tau begins to fold incorrectly into the cells, it disrupts and destroys the brain's ability to function. Alzheimer's disease is also a tauopathy. This probably helps explain why a person with FTD eventually begins to have many of the same late symptoms as persons with Alzheimer's disease. So I know that was kind of a lot today, but if you're, you know, if you're sitting here and you're listening to all this and you say, oh, wow, okay, this is where I think I see my wife or husband or whoever it is that you're working with struggling in these areas. And just like I did with my friends that have Alzheimer's disease, I will tell you, if you would like a copy of this so you can follow the progression of the disease with your care partner, your loved one, your person that you're caring for professionally, whatever it is, I will be happy to email it to you. Just go to my website, Summit Resilience Training. Click on the Contact Us and shoot me an email and tell me you'd like a copy of this, and I'd be happy to give it to you. It was kind of a surprise to me because I had never actually seen a stage chart for FTD. And so I think it, like Alzheimer's, is helpful if you know where the disease is going. I think it's really, really hopeful because that way at least you're not surprised, you're not dismayed, you're not, you know, taken aback by it or anything. You kind of know now this is what's going to happen when they get to this stage or this stage or this stage. And it can help you to be a better care partner overall if you have more information and know that when they're starting to stumble and so forth, that's where you really need to start changing your care. The scope of care has become more difficult. It's a shame there aren't very many places for people with frontal temporal. Even in the Denver area, I only know of about 3 places that will take somebody with FTD, behavioral or the primary progressive aphasia, because they're pretty much still functioning well enough that they can walk and talk and sometimes be a danger to other people. So it's kind of tough. The only ones in Denver that I know are some of the Juniper Villages and Bellevue Heights. And it's an Alzheimer's special care place, but they do take people with FTD. Thank God. Bless them for doing that. But yeah, by the time the folks get to the or have the motor movements and disorder, and motor disorders, they're generally, like I said, in a wheelchair really quickly and are often in a nursing home within the first 5 years. It's a difficult disease. If you need more information, you can always go to FTLD.com or .org, and they have information. Just Google frontal temporal, and you can find many, many websites that deal with this and offer support and resources, and you can also find support groups that deal with it. My company has a support group once a month for friends just with FTD, and it's on Zoom, so you can join us at any time. Just go on my website, and you can find information about the date of that. I think the next one is February 12th. All right. Well, that was quite a lot to talk about today, wasn't it? I hope it helped my friends with FTD and the people that love them, and I will see you next week with more resources and information on Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
You've been listening to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz. To learn more about her resources, services, classes, or to book speaking engagements, visit Jill's website at summitresiliencetraining.com. A new podcast drops every Tuesday, so join us as we learn more about dementias, resilience, and overcoming obstacles to find a positive outcome. Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz can be found on your favorite podcast provider. Please subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. Musical and technical support provided by Brian Hunter. See you next week.